Okay, welcome back again to another edition of Addiction and Redemption. We're getting closer to the redemption, but further into the addiction. Well, again, my name is Dave Keenest. Hit me up, davekeenest.com, or email me, dave@davekeenest.com. It's getting a lot easier to talk into the microphone the more you do it. It's kind of fun. I've been doing these podcast interviews and being on other people's podcasts, rather, and it's really fun. You know, I kind of want to veer off and talk about other things, but I'm kind of in the zone with this addiction stuff. I just kind of want to plow through the story, because at this point, it's kind of challenging to talk about, to be perfectly honest. It's also very cathartic. But I talked about in the last episode my first trip down to the west side of Chicago and what that entailed and how that went and how I scored heroin for the first time. And this was sort of a response. Here's another little snippet from my writing. So all I remember was gray, the air, the sky, the fogginess of Chicago's December or January, winter. My skin, pale and sagging, looking for colors it lost and forgot. I paced. I couldn't sit or be still. Black feelings made hideous thoughts. The outside was frigid with a moon-like horizon that went on through the suburbs and then down towards the city. Plods of urban snow piled on the roads, blackened and filthy from car exhausts, grease, and the season. It would be here for months if it became part of my brain. The compounds and neurons inside my head became vicious, rude, and inconsiderate, making holes through the matter that made up my reason and intellect. I slipped further and farther away and down into facets reserved for the sick. I knew it all and sat as a witness, watching a madman emerge from vile depths, knowing his capabilities, frailties, fractures, and smut, and the evil that would drive him insane. I moved through the house, the wooden floors beneath my socks, sliding up to my bedroom, then down to the basement, sighing and pacing and seeing myself in the mirror at the end of the downstairs hallway. It showed me my illness and that life was now altered, my face pulled downward from frowning, tugging my cheeks and my eyes all day long. I didn't shave. It took too much energy, and my shoulders hunched in and slouched with my spirit, sadness. Everywhere, all-consuming, stealing my heart and tempo, and making hope exist somewhere beyond this dimension. Words grunted out of necessity converse primal requests to my mother when needed, but mostly abused me emotionally and made six suggestions to keep gulping the poison. So this is kind of the backdrop to me seeking something better than alcohol, because I did not enjoy being drunk all the time, but I couldn't help it. And there was an event that happened before my first trip down to the West Side. I talked about my first trip down to the West Side in the last episode, but that was kind of in response to, I'd gone to this doctor the day before that happened, the day before my first trip to the West Side, and he prescribed all these Ambien to me. And I told him I couldn't sleep, and I was driving around on Ambien, and I ended up crashing my car, and the airbag went off, and then I crashed my car again, and I'm driving around in this stupor. And, you know, I'm actually really ashamed to talk about it, because I can't believe that this is something that I was capable of doing. And it's, you know, it's only, people are going to hear this and they're going to judge of that, I'm sure. And the only explanation I can offer is that I didn't kill anybody because I wasn't meant to kill anybody. That's the only explanation I can offer. And I actually know people in recovery who have killed people drunk driving. And it's only by the grace of God that I'm not one of them. It's only by the grace of God that I'm not sitting in a prison cell. And we'll get to God here in a few more episodes, what I choose to call God. But like I said, it didn't happen because it wasn't meant to happen. And I can see, sort of looking back, the divine articulation of all of it and how it all is just been pieced together so perfectly, and how it has all led up to this moment so gracefully, with all of its trials and tribulations as well. Life is not easy. But this first trip to the West Side, it was instrumental. It was like this newfound world that I had. And like I said in the previous talk, was that a $20 worth will last you a long time in the beginning. And so I would get like $20 worth, and I would be high for like 2 days. Now, it's such a sick, lying sociopath, the heroin itself, that it actually tricks you into believing that things are normal, right? It actually tricks you into believing that you're not as fucked up as you are. It just kind of makes you feel normal, right? Mixed with like this really amazing sense of elation. I wasn't shooting it at this point. And so I kind of started to regain this sense of normalcy in my life. And I would go down and see my friend Max. I would go pick it up on the west side. I would get nice and high. In the beginning, it just gets you so high. And not in this way that you're all fucked up. You're actually very alert. You're not nodding or going to sleep or passing out. You're very alert. And I would go and hang out with my friend Max, and it was just great. And he of course knew what I was doing. He's one of the least stupid people I ever met, but he would let me hang out. And you know, I remember hanging out with my friend Paul and just listening to music, and the music all of a sudden sounds good again. All of a sudden I'm hearing music again. I'm able to listen to music again. I'm able to articulate thoughts. I'm able to not feel insane. And I'm actually optimistic. I have this bright future ahead of me. Now, I ended up getting hired to go teach English in Japan. So now I got this job to look forward to. And this is like March. It's probably March of 2006, and I'm leaving for Japan in May. So all I got to do is kind of keep my shit together between now and then, and when I get there, I'll have a job, and it'll be fine, and I won't be lost anymore. And this is what the heroine was telling me. This is what the devil was telling me. You don't have to believe in God or the devil or heaven and hell, but what was happening with me is God and the devil were wrestling back and forth for the fate of my soul. And early on in the game, the devil had it, but I thought it was God, right? And there's a line in one of the songs I wrote, which I will definitely talk about. It's my one hit. If I have a hit, it's called the God Song. And the line goes, before the ayahuasca, before the clear blue skies, before the great awakening, there were demons disguised as angels in shiny foily packets containing China heroin. And so it was like the devil was disguised as God in this white powder. And this white powder that was the devil was telling me that everything was going to be just fine. I didn't have to worry about drinking anymore, and I actually stopped drinking. I drank way less. I might drink a beer or two, but I had this newfound love with this stuff. And this is how it starts with every junkie. Like, you read Anthony Kiedis' autobiography, he'll say that you get some on Friday, and then what happens is, you know, you'll have a little left over on Sunday, and you'll be like, oh, screw it, why waste it? And you'll just do it. And then all of the sudden, you know, you got some on Friday, it lasts till Sunday, and you do up that last tiny bit. This is like your $20 worth. You do that last bit on Sunday, and then you wake up on Monday, and you don't feel quite right. And this is when it starts to really fuck with you, because it's not like you're really sick at first. You just don't feel quite right. And what you tell yourself, what the devil tells you, is, well, you only need another $20, right? Take another $20 and go back down to the west side. So that's what I did. And what started to happen is I would get down to the Cicero exit, and there was this dude that stood, and he washed your windows when you pull off the exit. And I remember pulling off and rolling my window down and giving him a dollar. And I remember him looking at me and just going, so, man, he says, what you doing down here? I says, I'm down here to get some barbecue. And he goes, man, you down here to get some barbecue? You here for something else? And I remember looking at him and going, you know where to score? And he goes, yeah, of course I know where to score. I said, get in. So I just let this, you know, strange African-American man, windshield washer guy, into my car. But what would happen is his name was Black. He just said, just call me Black. Just call me Black. And he would have us drive around. He would say, take a right, take a left, take a right, take a left. And he would get me the best stuff. And there were a couple of times where I got put in really precarious positions because he sort of led me into alleyways. And all of a sudden, I'm in this fucking alleyway. You know what I mean? And there's like a car in front of me. And some dude gets out of the car in front of me. And he walks up to the car. Now, he could have had a gun. And he could have just said, get out of the fucking car, white boy, and stolen the car. You know, my parents' car I drove sometimes. I drive my mom's car down there. But he didn't. This never happened. And again, this didn't happen because it wasn't meant to happen. I wasn't robbed or beaten or killed because I wasn't meant to be robbed or beaten or killed. That wasn't in the cards for me. That's the only explanation I can offer here. It wasn't in the cards for me. And so he would get me really good shit. And then we would drive around. Me and this guy would get high. I'd buy him a bag, and we'd get high, and we'd just kind of drive around the West Side. Like, one time went and got some fucking fried chicken. I'm, like, hanging out eating fucking fried chicken with this guy Black, you know, down on the West Side of Chicago. But it's like, as soon as the dope went in, all the problems went away. As soon as I got that dope in me, I wasn't afraid of the police. As soon as I got high, I'd walk right up to a police officer at a gas station, look him right in the eye and say, "How you doing?" And he would say, "I'm fine. How are you?" And it was like there was this magic, this evil black magic working with this shit, you know? And it was fucked up. And this is the joke, the evil joke that heroin plays on everyone. It tricks you into thinking that things are going to be just fine, but they're not. So I'm going to leave it at that. And thanks again for listening. Brought to you by Keenest Coaching, dave@davekeenest.com. Hit me up if you would like to chat. Have a beautiful night. Bye-bye.